I reached peak oldness this morning because I sneezed and threw out my back.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
You know what I think that is I think you're just channeling.
I'm channeling my two hit points. Yeah.
Good. You're getting in character.
Previously on Bad Heroes.
There are things in this world worth fighting for. And when your mind is under attack, you have to use these things as an anchor to hold you to reality.
You stand with Nyx, facing down 10 glamorously masked thralls in the sweeping ballroom. Gideon, you have just been bitten by Lord Oberon. You sit at 2 hit points for your current hit points and your max.
Woo!
Iria is going to stay up here and cast Horde of Shards.
Talia and Oberon go up and start fighting, and they're just tearing each other apart.
So Wingatha is going to bite down on the cork of that bottled sunlight.
This bright light appears, and those 5 thralls fall back immediately. Oberon lifts Nyx up with his hand around his throat.
You can't imagine what it is to die. Wimmeroy, do not forget, but you will know soon enough.
Gideon muscles up enough energy to whisper,
Miko.
Tonrir is going to be attempting to cast Fury of the Sun. Anor Fury na Chimbodui!
It is more powerful than you know this spell to be. And then something really strange happens. As he rises up in the air, he says,
You think you can come into my castle and hunt me? This is my world. You are in my kingdom now, and every one of you will pay.
And as he says that, those 5 thralls all wake up because he has dropped his control over them. And suddenly, the lavish ballroom around all of you vanishes, and every one of you is alone. Each one of you is in your own personal nightmare, and it is up to each one of you to make it out alive. I should mention, we are actually going to do a new thing this episode as the content gets a little more, shall we say, intense. We're actually going to put up content warnings with this episode on our website at badheroescast.com/content warnings. So to the listener, you guys don't get warned, but to the listener, if anything at the end of last episode tripped a red flag for you, or even if nothing did, but you want to be careful, please check out that page of our website. It'll include the different things that might require warnings. And I'll also try to include the approximate times when those things happen. So you can skip past them if you like and still stick with the show. If you're claustrophobic, for example, you probably don't want to listen to Wingatha's portion.
Ooh, foreshadowing.
So yeah, we've been wanting to add content warnings for a while now, but this episode sort of necessitates it. So we're going to try to do that going forward for every episode. So if you want to know a little bit if there's going to be hairier subjects in the episodes, check that part of the website before you listen. If you don't want to know and you want to just be surprised, then just keep listening the way you've been listening. Eventually, we'll go back through old episodes and add warnings for those too, in case you want to share the show with somebody who has particular things they don't want to hear. I'm not sure when we'll get around to it, but we'll try. We're going to do our best to be comprehensive, but if there's anything in particular that you want us to note, please email us at badheroescast@gmail.com and I will add it. It is an easy extra step that I do not mind doing, especially if it makes you more comfortable. So.
Is there going to be a category for my puns?
Skip the whole episode.
Yeah. You just couldn't listen to the show. Yeah. Too bad. Yeah. Bad jokes there will be no warning for.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's it. Anything else from you guys before we get into it?
I am so ready. I'm so excited.
I'm glad you're excited to die.
Suddenly, the exclamation point did this little Morphe thing where it turned into a question mark. I just want to note that really quick.
All right. Last episode, Tonrir dealt a powerful blow to Oberon. And when it looked like he was going to fall, when it looked like you had finished him, he began levitating and channeled a spell. And now every one of you is alone in what appears to be a nightmare. So we're going to do kind of individual scenes as we go into this. We're going to continue to move through the rounds because you guys are, in fact, still in initiative. And you guys are going to try to break out of these nightmares. And I have some stuff prepared for them. But if you guys have something that you want to explore or that you think the character would think of, please tell me. I'm super happy to wing it. But we're just going to kind of get in there and explore the space. And the space is going to get better or worse, depending on how you roll. So, Iria, you are first. And Iria, you are playing music for a crowd of people. And the notes you are playing are skillful and powerful, but the result is brutal. Everyone listening to you is suffering. There's a place that you used to play your instrument or spoken word back at home in the Clawstrike Pride. What did that place look like?
I would often play like when my parents were telling stories. So around the campfire with all the little kin and yeah, so that's usually where I would play and like the whole clan would be there.
Cool. Okay. I think that's where you are. You are around that campfire. And who's there?
Everyone. But specifically the people I definitely like, you know, can pick out in the crowd are my parents, my mom and dad, my best friend, Ramsey, and my former partner, Jasmine, who I was, like, extremely in love with. And for some reason, Nyx is also there, even though he's never been to that area that I know of.
Okay, so, and are you standing, like, behind or near your parents as they're performing?
Yeah, I think I'm, like, behind them.
Okay. So your dad, Amir, is a scruffy, older-looking tabby, and he is a really charismatic storyteller. And that's what he's doing. He's telling a story right now. And as he often does, he's kind of getting lost on tangents, kind of getting lost in his own world. And that's where you got that. That's where you got this dreaminess that you bring everywhere. And your mother, Sybil, is a musician, right?
Yes.
Okay, so she is a large black catfolk, and she looks a lot like you, but stronger and very serious. What instrument is she playing?
She plays strings, so like we don't have a guitar. It's kind of like a sitar kind of thing. So I usually am like backup for her dreamy sitar music.
Okay, all right. So I think you're doing that. And what are you performing? Are you playing your hang drum or are you
my hang drum, and a little bit of beatboxing. I gotta get that like record scratching. I definitely can't do it for real.
You're such a gift. Okay, so you're doing that. You're playing your drum behind this other performance, and it's a familiar place, and you are surrounded by familiar faces, but it is sort of just hit that moment where you realize something is really wrong. Something is really, really wrong, because the other people, even the other people who are performing, they are beginning to struggle. And you can see pain on everybody's face, and you can't stop playing. And you are certain that what is hurting them is you. And as you're performing, something catches your eye. It's something under your blouse, under your vest, on the skin of your chest. Do you look at it?
Yeah, so I go ahead and I look down.
So when you look down, you realize it is not on your chest, it is in your chest. And it's your beating heart. And you can see it clear as day because your chest is open. It's not gory, there's no blood, but your heart is on display. And you feel extremely vulnerable like this. They're just very open to the world. And the main reason that you feel vulnerable is because when you look at your heart, you can see that something is wrong. There is something inky black creeping in at the edges. It's that corruption. It's that same dark force you can hear in your music. It's not just in your music, it's in your heart. And it looks like it's there to stay. Iria, I want you to roll a will saving throw.
Okay, bear with me as I dump out all my dice. Okay, I got 14 plus 2 for a will saving throw, so 16.
Jesus, that dice.
Is it too much? Should I not do that?
No, it's great. That's the big purple one I got you?
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like you took like a giant globe and just thunked it down. No, it's great. Okay, so 14 plus a 2 modifier, 16?
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. Okay. What is Iria doing?
I mean, she's definitely feeling desperate because all the people that she loves hates her right now, or it feels that way to her. But she realizes it's a nightmare, so she's going to try and do something to wake herself up. I think she's going to try and, like, touch her heart and see if that, like, does anything.
Okay, so you are looking at your beating heart, and you are watching that blackness creep through it, and you have that overwhelming feeling of despair. And I think you also have this really strong feeling of shame that comes from what you're seeing, and it also comes from something else that you are right on the edge of remembering. And right now, it feels a lot like your first day out in the world without your clan. And that day, you were carrying around a lot of heartbreak and a lot of loneliness. And you had finally made it to the city, not the capital of Vire, just a city called Atheza. And it's a smaller city backed up against the wilds that you used to call home. And it feels like that day because that day, you didn't feel like playing. There was absolutely no music in your heart. And you felt probably worse than you've ever felt in your life. But you were hungry, and it was either busking or pickpocketing, and you didn't have a lot of faith in your ability to do the latter. So even though it felt hollow, you played. As you touch your heart, you look up and you are living that moment again. You are living that moment where you are playing, even though you don't want to be playing, even though you feel terrible. And slowly but surely, it starts to help. And it wasn't the money that people gave you that eased your pain. It was all of the smiles. There was a dwarven kid that started dancing and a passing human man who pulled out a pan flute and played a duet with you just for no reason. And there was this woman, a beautiful elven woman, who stopped just to tell you she liked your vibe. And you're living that moment and you do what you did then, which is you blush and you nearly drop your drum. And you are just overtaken by this feeling that you still have songs inside you, Iria, and nobody can play them but you. And that woman, that elven woman who came up to you, you can't picture her very well because you only met her once, but you see her now, and she looks at you, and she tells you to wake up. And on your next round, you will wake up.
Nice.
Hey, you did it!
Woo!
All right, Wingatha. Hey, Wingatha.
Hey.
I got your nightmare.
Hey, I got your mind. You ready for a bad time?
No.
God damn it. Time to die.
No.
No, you're supposed to kill all of us.
God damn it. This is my nightmare that I'm living.
You're a DM for a podcast, and you're working on bringing your party to the conclusion of its season. And you're doing so well, but deep within your chest, a tickle stirs.
a tickle stirs, and nothing calms it, and speaking intensifies the tickle. All right, Wingatha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wingatha, you are in that cage, hanging from the ceiling of a dungeon, and it is dark and it is dank, and there is water dripping down on you from somewhere, just one droplet at a time, but it's the only noise, and the repetition is maddening. Your legs are cramping because this cage is too small, both for your body and your mind, and you have to crouch to fit. This is a real place that lives on in your memories. A dungeon out in the wilds of Kul'dam. How did you get here?
This was a mercenary job gone wrong. Wingatha was with her band of mercenaries. They were being paid to hunt down and take care of this group of bandits, and they got ambushed in the wilds. And Wingatha doesn't know what happened to the rest of her party, but she got knocked out in the fight, and she woke up in this cage.
Okay. So you had been leading your little band of mercenaries, and you got ambushed. And instead of being killed like you would have wanted, you ended up here in this lightless room in a stifling cage. And this memory is one of the many things that keeps you from sleeping at night. Because sometimes you close your eyes and this is what you see. You spent a week in that cage with no weapons, no armor, no protection, and no hope towards the end. And in the real world, I think you often sleep sitting, sword in your hand and armor on, too uncomfortable to rest deeply and too uncomfortable to dream. And that's by design, because you don't want to sleep. But you're sleeping now, and it's worse than a dream, because there is no fog at the edge of your vision and no sudden twitch bringing you back into the waking world. Your efforts to forget were all for naught, because it is happening again. You are back in that cage, and you are terrified.
Wingatha's just, like, looking around and going, fuck!
Tell me what you try to do.
So she's gonna test this cage for its strength. So first she's going to grab the bars and try to rattle them, see if they budge at all.
So you're going to try to kind of rattle the bars, going to try to kick your way out, going to try to test the stability of the cage.
Yeah.
Give me that will saving throw.
Okay. She'll try a few things. She's going to like try to shake the bars. And if that doesn't work, then she's going to start kicking, like stomping the bottom of the cage to see if like she can break it that way.
Okay.
And I'm going to use my point of inspiration.
Cool.
For this. So roll twice. Okay, 15 was the higher roll, and with my negative and positive modifiers, I get a plus 1, so 16.
Okay, even with all of your, don't you have like, how many negative points do you have going for you?
I had minus 2 to all rolls, and then my iron will gives me plus 3.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, that'll do. You are kicking at this cage, and in your memory, this did not work. This did not save you, but now it does. You kick and you fall through the bottom of this cage and you land on the ground. And what is your motivation for waking up? You feel this strong sense that, like, one, you don't want to be here for obvious reasons. But it's not just that. There has to be something more than being afraid.
Wingatha, at this point in her life, her greatest motivation is freedom.
In the memory or in present time?
Both. Freedom to travel and see the world. And in the memory, I think this was one of the turning points in her life that leads her towards leaving behind this life of being a mercenary, because she never wants to experience this again. And so she's thinking about the greatest sunset that she has ever seen up till now. And it was beautiful. It was the first time that she had been on a ship on the ocean. And it was just this dazzling vista of the sun going down and the sky changing colors and reflecting onto the water all around her in every direction as far as the eye can see. And to her, that represented this unlimited potential to go wherever she wanted.
I really, really like that. That's really good for Wingatha. So I think when you are doing this, when you're trying to break out, when you're trying to wake up, you remember that sunset. Does Wingatha get seasick?
She got a little seasick on that first journey.
Okay. So that, like, you remember that, and like you were a little sick and you felt ill and maybe you even threw up, but you were so happy to see that sunset and to be on a ship where you could go. I mean, you were going to go to a completely new, far off place. And I think it was so exciting that, like, even as you were ill, you didn't care. You just had this big, stupid smile on your face, and I think that's what you remember. And I think that memory makes you wake up.
Nice.
All right. Man, you guys rolled well.
Yay.
I did not expect half of you to do well.
I'm worried.
So this is time for the other half.
Yeah. Statistically, good luck. All right. Gideon.
Hello.
Hello. Gideon, you are in your family library, and you are surrounded by books that you cannot read. And maybe for anyone else, this would not be much. A confusing oddity at best, and certainly not the stuff of deep, dark nightmares. But for you, Gideon, for someone who has thrived on knowledge, and knowledge alone, for nearly a century, this revelation that you cannot understand written language is miserable. It is not unlike the spell you cast on Oberon. Was it called aphasia?
Yes.
It's not unlike that, and nothing you do seems to fix it. But at least you are somewhere familiar, somewhere you know. You are at home in the Greyfrost Manor. What do you do?
I think upon discovering that she can't read, she would get frustrated and leave the library and walk out and try to see if anybody could help her solve this problem.
Okay. Where do you go? And like, what does it look like there? You know, I've kind of described your library before, which has these big stained glass windows and ice whirling outside and just books covering every wall. And I think that usually that's a very precious place to you. But when you leave that space, where do you go and what does it look like?
I think her first instinct is to go and try and find her sister, Amara.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to walk out of the library into these, they're pretty spacious halls, but they're not over the top or anything. It is just a manor. They just have like high ceilings and feel very roomy. But she knows that her sister would usually be out in the courtyard, probably training. So she makes her way downstairs and heads outside.
Okay, cool. So you walk through these hallways and you know this path, but in this hallucination, dream, whatever you're experiencing, it takes you a long time. Like, you feel like you are walking through these halls for a long time, and they are longer than they should be, and they twist in ways they shouldn't. And finally, you make it out to the courtyard to find your sister. Normally in a courtyard, I would ask what grows, but in Silverscale, in your home, really, really high in the mountains, nothing grows. Not unless you guys have found magical means of keeping it. So what does this courtyard look like?
The courtyard does have like almost skeletal looking trees, like trees that have no leaves on them that are just covered in snow. The courtyard itself is like a big rectangle or square of gray brick that has a light layer of snow on it. There are some enchantments and spells in place to keep snow from piling up too high and to keep ice from forming in general walkways and things like that. But otherwise it's, you know, you exit out the back door into the courtyard, and they have like the house has pillars that line the outside, and it forms a little rectangle in between them. That's where the courtyard is, and that's where Amara would be practicing.
Okay. Are there any like statues or sculptures out here?
There's an old fountain that's kind of in the back, past the courtyard. It's no longer running. It doesn't even have like frozen water or anything in it. It's just like a barren fountain that they had made and then couldn't really use.
Okay. All right. This is kind of like a weirdly desolate place, and maybe it's, you know, familiar to you and maybe it's comforting, but there's a lot of, sort of subdued grandeur here, but it's also kind of rough. Like, it's pretty barren and those trees are skeletal and it doesn't necessarily look like a warm place. So you go out into this courtyard looking for Amara, and you see her. Amara is there. She's not training, actually. She is leaning against that old fountain. And I think even now it brings you just great joy to see her. Amara looks a lot like you, but she is strong in every sense of the word. In the places you look delicate, she looks tough. Amara has a lot of the same elegance as you, but she looks like a force of nature. And you know better than anyone that she is. Gideon, you gave your sister's name when you were trying to pull one over on Oberon. Why'd you do that?
Gideon has always looked up to the fact that Amara is, you know, the embodiment of bravery and toughness. While Gideon has always struggled in that front, like she has said multiple times, she has no upper body strength. She really relies on her mind more than anything. And Amara is not that way. Amara is intelligent, but also has the ability to hold her own in a fight. And Gideon wanted to use Amara's name as a way to try and channel some of her bravery in doing this task that was very dangerous and kind of stupid.
I like that a lot. Okay, so you see Amara. What do you do?
Amara's just leaning up against the fountain, like there's nobody else around.
So if you stop to look, instead of just rushing up to her, you do see that she's not alone. There are two other people with her. Beside Amara is your mother. She's not sitting, she's standing. And it's your mother, Cassandra. And you and your mother share the same sharp-angled features. But there is, as there has always been in life, this permanent sadness to her, this really downtrodden feel that even the crown on her head can't combat. So you see your mother, and you also see Reyna, who is your mother's partner and captain of the guard. And Reyna has dark skin and tight braids and that same warrior build as Amara, but way more scars. And their presence is perhaps the most unwelcome in this dream because they're talking, and they're talking about something really unnerving and really familiar. Do you walk up and interrupt or try to interact with anyone?
I think Gideon, seeing that her mother and Reyna were there as well instead of just Amara, she would walk up, but a little hesitantly. Like, she doesn't want to interrupt the conversation, but she wants to step in and maybe join in or hear what they're talking about.
Okay. So I think you walk up and they don't seem to see you. What's Amara's weapon? Does Amara have a sword? Like, what does she train with? Probably multiple things.
Yeah, her primary is also a bow staff.
Okay. So I think Amara is kind of spinning her bow staff in her hand, and she looks really worried. She looks conflicted. And so does your mother. And as you approach, nobody sees you. And you get the distinct impression that they can't see you. They can't hear you. And you have walked into a conversation that may have not happened here, may have not happened like this, but you know it is a conversation that really happened because it changed your life. And right in front of you, you see Reyna making a case to your mother and sister that you should not be allowed to stay at home. And I think Reyna is looking at your mother, looking at their partner, and they say, Gideon has to get out and see the world. Cassandra, this is a form of neglect, to let her sit in there day after day looking for solace in books and starving herself of the world. I know what happened to Sebastian changed her, but Gideon is my daughter now too, and I can't stand the thought of this, of just her wasting away in there. It's no way to live. Maybe it didn't happen like this, but it did happen. There was a moment where the three people most important to you stood and decided your fate without you. And your fate was to be banished from your library, from your home, from everything that has ever made you feel safe. You didn't choose to leave. And in this moment, you feel that sense of dread and loss and betrayal all over again. And I think your fears are summed up in one sentence uttered by your mother, who looks just as frightened as you feel when she asks, what if she's not strong enough? Gideon, roll a will saving throw.
Oh, no, it's a 10.
We knew it was coming.
Oh, wait. Do I have a modifier? Oh, I have a 3 modifier for will. Wait. I also have iron will. My will modifier is 3, and I have iron will, so it's +2. So total is 15.
Really? Okay. Damn, you guys are all just like fucking nailing it. Okay.
I'm so scared.
I guess I should have made this check harder, huh? Okay. So
I want to say as a piece of flavor, as Gideon heard this and heard her mother say that and heard Reyna talking about banishing her, she would have continued approaching. Like she may have walked up within earshot, heard that, and then silently wiped away some tears from her eyes and then continued walking forward.
Are you walking forward towards Amara?
Specifically all 3 of them. Like she almost wants to, since she's heard this and it doesn't seem like they've seen her, she would want to continue walking forward almost as if to interrupt the conversation now.
I think just through sheer force of will, this scene is actually changing. And they do see you now, all of them. What do you say?
So she would take a deep breath, kind of try to steady herself since she was hurt by what she just heard, kind of hold herself a little taller and look straight at Reyna with the book still in her hand that she can't even comprehend and say, I'm stronger than you know.
When you say that, Amara smiles, and then the ground crumbles away beneath your feet. And suddenly you are not standing in that courtyard. You are standing in another familiar place. You are standing inside the original city of Silverscale. You are inside a half-crumbled ruin, and Amara is there with you. And I think she is racing ahead of you, exploring, and she's a lot younger in this scene. This was a long time ago. She has fewer scars, and she is a lot slighter. She's not as strong as she is in present day yet. But she still has that passion and that drive, that fire. This also is a memory, but it's a better one. You explored these ruins at least once with Amara. Did you want to do this, or did Amara drag you along?
Amara dragged me along.
Okay. So I think you remember chasing Amara through these familiar ruins where you are not allowed to be. And you have this persistent image of following a flame. Because your sister is and always has been a guiding light. And as you struggle against this nightmare, you remember following her through the collapsed ruins of Silverscale. Not the Silverscale built high in the mountains that your family calls home now, where it is so cold that nothing thrives, but down below where everything is green, where everything is alive. This was your first home, where I think you spent your youngest and your happiest years before it was destroyed. And in those ruins, you were frightened then just as you are frightened now, because exploring this fallen city, it made you feel like a ghost. But you eventually caught up to Amara, and I think even though you are afraid, you're probably struggling not to show it, right?
Yeah, especially if she's younger.
You are younger. And when you finally have caught up to Amara, you are out of breath and you kind of feel like every shadow might be something horrible. Because you have bad memories in this place. And it's not safe here. And I think Amara looked at you and she saw that you were afraid. And she said something to motivate you, to encourage you. And I think it's something that you still remember when you're afraid now. What did she tell you?
As Gideon's kind of struggling to hold back her fear unsuccessfully, I imagine Amara would turn back and see this and come back over to her and just hold out a hand and reach out to Gideon and say, it's okay to be afraid. Just don't let it hold you back.
And I think you remember that now, Gideon, as you are trying not to be suffocated by the sense of dread that you are feeling. And you know in this moment that this hallucination, this dream, this nightmare, whatever you're in, it's trying to kill you. But Amara is there with you in your mind. And she grabs your hands and looks into your eyes, and there is that fury and that passion and that unstoppable energy in her face. And you can feel in this moment how your sister would grow up to be somebody who can motivate armies. Because the look she gives you, she believes more in you now than you have ever believed in anything. And she says, Gideon, you are a Grey Frost and you are stronger than this. You are not finished. Wake up. Wake up and hand that gaudy vampire his ass.
Get it. Get it.
Yeah.
And I think she reaches out to you and she pulls you out of this dream with her claws out. And I think when you wake up, your claws are out too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man, we're fucking 3 for 4. I'm...
Oh, no.
No pressure, though. Woo!
I did practice rolls while you were gone, and...
How'd it go?
Well, you know, I'm going to see where I bought these dice from and see if I can get a refund.
Well, that doesn't bode well.
No, it doesn't!
Hey, this is your GM, Dre Silvertooth, and welcome to episode 19 of Bad Heroes, part 15 of the Forgotten Court arc. Hey, we are late again. The pandemic has messed up a lot of things, and for me personally, the main thing that has been totally thrown off is my mental health. So I'm sorry for the delay, and I hope you will stick with us, and I hope the care that went into making this episode has made it worth the wait. Our season finale recording session was over 4 hours long, so we have split it into two parts, and this episode is part one. I don't want to set a solid release date for part two because I'm not completely confident in our ability to get it out on a tight schedule, but I can promise we're doing our best to get back on the regular schedule, and when we do get it to you, it's going to be really good. I am so excited for you to hear the rest of this episode and for you to hear part two of the finale. We are all so damn proud of it. Social media time. We can be found on Twitter, Facebook, and even on Instagram at Bad Heroes Cast. Our website is badheroescast.com, and our Patreon is patreon.com/badheroes. Leanne and I are going to sit down sometime after we finish editing part two of this finale and do a little bonus recording where we discuss our use of music in the Forgotten Court arc. She is a bit of a music theory geek, and it is awesome, and I think it is going to make for some really good listening. That'll be up on Patreon just as soon as it's ready, along with the other player interviews and the other goodies that are already there. Speaking of music, oh boy, is there a lot of music in this episode. Bad Hero's love affair with Kai Engel's music continues. We want to thank Kai Engel for use of the songs Laburnum, Evermore, November, Global Warming, Smoldering, Cobweb Morning, and Great Expectations. Kai Engel's other work can be found and purchased at kaiengel.bandcamp.com. We also used a song called 100 Seconds by Punch Deck, which is like a really cool name. Liska Winter did their own drums under their spoken word countersong, and it is rad as hell. And last but not least, our theme, as always, is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane. Whew, I think that is it. We will get the next episode to you just as soon as possible. Enjoy the rest of this episode and stay safe, everybody. We'll see you then. All right, so I'm going to ask you questions, but if I describe anything that doesn't feel right to your image of what happened, please correct me. I just, I did my best to fill in with the information that I had. So please feel free to correct me. You know, these character stories, like, they belong to you guys. So if I describe something incorrectly, I want you guys to tell me, and I want you guys to tell me how you see it.
It was actually mauve.
Whew. All right. Tonrir. Tonrir, you stand in a very familiar forest. A forest that was your home for nearly 40 years. What is this forest called?
The forest actually doesn't really have a name among my people. It's just where we are. There's villages and other things throughout it that are sparse and far between. But we never actually made a name for it ourselves, and we don't know what the outsiders call it.
Okay. Gotcha. What does it look like? Like, what kind of, like, flora, fauna?
So the canopy of the trees sits rather high off the ground. We're talking, you know, more like 70, 80 feet. The ground rolls gently. It's not as jagged or rocky as some other forests might be. And the trees themselves are very, very thick and lush, and they provide enough branches for both being above ground and moving from tree to tree if you're agile enough, but also having enough brush to duck into it with a decent amount of soft grass in between the bushes and the occasional meadow to help spread the trees out from time to time.
Sounds like a druidic paradise. What are the animals like? Like, what's the biggest animal in there besides you guys?
Besides us, there's been encounters with, I mean, everything from bears and dire wolves to, you know, some more of the fantastical creatures that you would find, like big snakes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gideon pokes her head in your dream and goes, ugh. I tried to write bears and I wrote beers.
Huge bears! Like, suddenly we're all dwarves. Huge bears! We fight them all the time!
It's a bear attack. Run for it, laddies.
Run! Make sure you have some bread before you go.
Lay down and take an aspirin. You'll never make it. There's too many.
Ride the kegs! Ride them all!
Anyway, you were saying?
Blooper reel.
Oh, no, this is staying in.
Some are of the fantastical and fae-like creatures that occasionally adorn most forests, but this one mostly has your typical woodland variety of wolves, dire wolves, bears, and you know, other fae creatures.
Okay. Man, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in this forest. And you are standing in this forest at night, and you are watching a fire in the distance. And this is not just a dream or a hallucination. This is a memory. It's a compilation of several memories, actually. But right now, you are in a very specific one. You are remembering day 8 of your Tul Taran in Thu Idlia, which is a rite of passage in your village. You were practicing wood shape off on your own in a deep meditative state and communing with the trees. And it had been peaceful. I think it all came very easily to you, the being alone and the druidic work. And I think that you were excited to show your people what you'd learned. And then you smelled fire. And as soon as you did, as soon as you began to look and listen, you knew something was very wrong. You could feel trembling deep in the earth, animals running. And low in your stomach, you felt the forest shudder. That forest, it was writhing, it was hurting. And its carefully curated balance was being thrown all at once into chaos. That forest that was your home, it was also the home of more than 200 elves. It was a druidic stronghold, and therefore it had been tended to with an almost impossible level of care. And I think that explains all of the incredible animals and fae there. It was a well-protected paradise, and it had never suffered like this. And when the forest did suffer, I think you felt it scream. And right now, in this moment, you are at the top of a deep ravine, getting your first look at the village and at the heart of the forest, and you're watching them both burn. Roll a will saving throw.
Uh, 18 plus 6, whatever.
What? Oh, wow. Okay. Damn.
Fuck.
Okay.
Okay. I'm good. I'm fine.
Ooh. All right. Okay. Man, you guys all just like rolled your way out of a very bad situation.
The force is strong with us today.
Okay. Settling my stomach now. It's fine.
So, Tonrir, you stand at a fork in the path, one that did not actually exist. One way leads towards the fire. The other leads away from it. And you can feel that you should not walk towards that fire, towards that memory. I think you do a lot in the waking world to avoid it. And right now it's calling to you like a siren's call, but you know better. You know that there is something you need to be doing right now. And that way will not help you. Something else is calling to you too. Something away from the fire. And I think using sheer force of will, you pull yourself away from the most horrible moment of your life to walk another path. And as you walk away from it through the woods, you are also walking through time into another memory. And this one is after the fire. What did you do? I knew you stayed in that forest for a while. What was it like?
There for Tonrir, after getting through that fire in the weeks following, he meandered and actually lost some weight because he just wasn't eating all that often. And there were moments where he would just sit in absolute silence. There would be moments where he would be, you know, in the fetal position on the ground, hitting it with his fist out of absolute frustration. And there were moments where he would just be walking forward to get forward somewhere, anywhere that wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think for a long time after this event, you wandered through this charred and ruined forest. And I think your soul was in tatters. And it's probably safe to say that this was the darkest hour for you, Tonrir, because there was nothing even left to fight. It was the aftermath of a terrible event, the quiet after the storm, and in some very real ways, that's worse. You have to decide who you're going to be after a tragedy you can't possibly hope to forget, and how you're going to sit with a rage that you have no outlet for. It was on one of these terrible walks through the charred skeleton of this forest, through burnt and ruined stumps of trees far older than you, that you spotted something that was going to change your life. It looked like a gray cotton ball in a sea of black ash, like a pile of seed fluff, maybe, but it wasn't this season for seeds like that. And I think you crouched to take a closer look, and that gray cotton ball stood up and clicked its tiny beak and tried to raise its wings to look bigger, to look intimidating. And it was as pitiful as it was sweet. It was a baby owl with no flight feathers and soot smeared all over its body. And I think you searched, but you only learned what you already knew. This little owlet, just like you, was totally alone. What'd you do?
Tonrir looked at that owl and looked about the forest. And it was such a contrast to everything else that he had seen prior. And he felt a life inside of him for the first time in what was a very long time since the forest had died, because the forest and him had communicated as if in harmony. And it was just a built-in part of that, of his psyche, of his world. And it had all been silenced. And here was this other life finally making noise and, you know, clicking its beak and chirping at him. And so he, with what little will he could muster at that moment, worked on employing the skills he knew to help calm an animal down so that way he could pick it up and make sure that it was okay. So he worked on scooting any of the soot and ash away so that way he could get a hand underneath it and pick it up and bring it to his face to look into its eyes.
Tonrir, you lifted this little owlet up. And he was so small, Tonrir, so impossibly fragile in your hands. And I think as you were clearing that ash from around him so you could lift him up, you saw something under it that is an image that is still fixed in your mind today. Even though there was still ash swirling through the air, because it does that for a long time after a big fire. And the wind was heavy with the scent of burnt resin, and everything smelled like destruction. Under this little owl, you saw something sprouting. It was just two leaves on a flimsy stem, but it was bright green, poking up through the soot. The forest, your forest, it was already sprouting. It was going to take a long time, but it was going to come back. And so were you. This little owl, this little dehydrated, weak, ash-covered puff, would be your constant companion for the following months as you nursed him back to health with a level of gentle attention you didn't know yourself capable of. And when he recovered, he became known to you as Rulthuin, your familiar, your owl. And Rulthuin's incredible will to live gave you strength then, and it gives you strength now. And you can actually hear him. You can hear your owl screeching, getting louder and louder as he calls to you from the real world, begging you to wake up. And you do.
I'm back, bitches.
That was so fucking adorable up until that point.
Woo!
Oh, man.
Oh, what incredible look we have.
Oh, my God.
No kidding. I was so worried about that.
Woo! Hey, everyone is awake.
Woo!
Man, no spoilers, but that could have broken real bad for all of you.
Yikes.
Man, by the skin of your teeth. You guys all rolled really well. I'm shook.
I didn't.
You didn't, but you had good modifiers. Very willful. A willful creature. All right. So, hey, Iria.
Huh?
You're awake.
Yes. I'm sleepily rubbing the sleep out of my eyes. And yawning. Big cat yawn.
It's a strange sensation because you are basically where you were when you went under. You didn't like fall to the ground or fall asleep. You actually have the feeling that you were just staring straight ahead, just standing exactly where you were, which I think is holding up Gideon. So you come to and you have your arm around Gideon, who still looks just terrible.
And her claws are out for some reason.
Oh, God.
Yes, her claws are out and you are sort of supporting her. And Wingatha is next to you. And Tanrir is a little further across the room. And in the middle of the room, you see Oberon. And he is levitating, actually very high, towards the high vaulted ceiling. And his arms are spread out at his sides, and he is channeling.
Does he know that I'm awake?
He does. You actually hear what sounds like upset murmuring, and it's Nyx. Nyx is on the floor.
Oh, no.
He is staring straight ahead like you were moments ago.
Okay, so he's still in his dream.
Mm-hmm.
How far away is Nyx?
Nyx is kind of in the center of the room, but I mean, we can say it's like 30 feet away. You can reach him.
Okay, and this thing that Oberon is doing, it's not like he's not like chanting.
He's muttering. He is muttering under his breath.
Okay. So countersong would not work?
It would.
Oh, okay.
I know countersong is like for like music stuff only. It's not supposed to counteract like talking. I don't care because that will never be applicable for any situation ever. So to me, it makes sense that if someone is doing something that is an audible mind control, whether they are speaking or singing or whatever, countersong just makes sense to me.
Okay. Well, I think Iria, she's also holding Gideon, so it's going to be hard for her to get to Nyx and try to like wake him up.
You drop Gideon.
So she's gonna like say Nyx's name really loud, like Nyx, Nyx, and see if that like kind of rouses him. Does that do anything?
Let me roll and see. Oh, that's a bad roll. No.
There it is. There's the one.
Of course.
It's an NPC. No, it doesn't rouse him. And what does countersong do exactly? He can use your roll instead of his. Is that correct?
Yeah. So any creature within 30 feet of the bard may use the bard's perform check result in place of its saving throw.
Okay. Well, he failed his saving throw, so go ahead and give me a performance check.
Okay. I rolled a 16 plus 5.
Oh my god. Okay. Talk to me. I mean, tell me what you say. Tell me what you do. Because this is going to work. You look over and you see Nyx struggling against whatever he is dreaming. And it's really sad. I mean, you can hear him whispering and you only catch a little bit of it, but you hear him whispering that he never meant to hurt anyone. So tell me how you bring him out of it.
I'm holding Gideon up with one hand and the rest of my body. And then with the other hand, I have my hang drum like kind of on the side and I'm hitting it with my hand. But I'm also like saying a poem.
Perfect.
Nyx. Nyx, if you can just escape this dreamscape. Nyx, to get back to us, you must become aware of your surroundings. Feel the cold ballroom floor beneath your skin. Smell the dust and the sand kicking up after thousands of years. Smell the fear. Dozens of thralls locked in their own minds. Leave this nightmare behind. You are with us now. No one is getting hurt. You are the liberator. Hear my words and lift your head. This place shall no longer be ruled by this one undead. It is time for us to bring this reign to an end. Nyx, wake up. Your friends, we need you.
Mad skills in your poetry slinging. Okay, I think that works. You know, I think you see him start blinking. And he still took a really heavy physical hit right before this and got knocked down. But he, I think, cranes his head over and looks at you and he smiles.
I smile back. And I mouth olive juice to him.
What? I genuinely do not understand that joke.
Olive juice. So if you mouth olive juice to someone, it looks like you're saying I love you.
Oh.
Leanne and I are like, what the fuck?
Is this a safe word? Or what am I missing here?
It's a secret catfolk language.
You never did that? Like with your parents, you mouth olive juice?
No. Why would you just mouth I love you? Why would you mouth olive juice?
I don't know.
In a secret catfolk tradition, instead of mouthing I love you, Iria mouths olive juice. Incredible. All right. Wingatha, you are up.
All right. So you said Oberon is levitating kind of in the middle of the ballroom?
He is, yeah.
Okay. So,
let me remind you how this room is laid out, because it's going to matter for you. So, the ballroom is 90 by 60 feet. The catwalk up above is 45 feet up. The ceiling is 60 feet up, and Oberon is hovering about 40 feet in the air.
Can I throw a spear that far? Let's see. So I have a long spear, but it doesn't have a range on it. I don't think this is a throwable spear because it's so big. It's just piercing type, two-handed. Mm. Okay. I have a backup plan. It's not a good plan, but it is a plan.
We love these.
In classic Wingatha spirit, I'm sure it's insane.
Okay, so Wingatha just woke up and she's taking in this scene around her and she's seeing the rest of her party in the process of waking up as well and Oberon levitating. And the first thing she's going to do is look around for something to throw at him, but he's too high up and she doesn't see anything. So she's going to bend down and pull the boots off her feet.
Okay, good.
Revealing the pink fuzzy slippers.
Good.
That are a little smushed and less fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
Probably also kind of sweaty, right?
The pink matted slippers.
You know what? No, forget that. They are enchanted, so they stay fluffy and beautiful.
Not smelly.
And like powder clean at all times. It is their, it's their secret power you just learned about right now.
She's going to run up the curtain that's to the left of her.
Okay.
Towards that walkway. Because I see that it wraps around the room.
Yep, it does. Yep. So you run to the west side of the room and start just trying to climb the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
45 feet into the air.
Mm-hmm.
But you have slippers.
Yes.
Just, you can do this. Like, the slippers stick to the wall. I'm just like, roll, give me a dexterity check, just like for flavor.
Okay.
Whether you look like you're...
Okay, whether it's graceful or not.
Yeah, whether you look cool, like a cool superhero one, or if you look like your feet are going on an adventure without you and you're just like pooping weapons out of your bag.
Oh my gosh.
I rolled a 4.
All right. Well, so you like kick off your boots and just like throw yourself at the wall and just start running up it. And I think you all get an eyeful of Wingatha like bent 90 degrees, just looking completely unhinged. As everything just kind of droops to one side and like all of your stuff, all of your weapons, all of your backpack is just like bloop, falling backwards as you run up this curtain. Okay, so you do that.
Okay.
You trying to launch yourself onto the walkway up there?
I'm on the, yeah, so do I make it?
You make it.
Onto the walkway, okay.
So you run up this curtain, and this is the first time you've seen the top of this walkway because Tonrib was on it, but you weren't. And you run all the way up 45 feet into the air and I think leap onto the catwalk. And it looks ridiculous and it also looks very cool. And where you leap onto the catwalk, you actually see several coffins.
Mm.
They're open and they're empty. But one in the middle looks very decorative and very fancy.
Interesting. So Wingatha was all set to just like jump onto Oberon from above, like aerial attack.
Mm-hmm.
Throw caution to the wind. She's like running along the walkway, and then like it's like she does that double take, and she runs past the coffin, and then it's like, and
and you see her step backwards twice,
and then she takes a second look at this coffin, and she's thinking that maybe this is a backup coffin for Oberon because she burned one in his bedchamber. But what if he uses this one too?
Mm-hmm.
So
motherfucker's got decoy coffins.
Somebody does not want to die.
So I think she's gonna try to destroy this coffin.
Nice. How you do this?
Well, if only I had an object that could make fire.
Prepare your dice and prepare your luck, my friend.
So she's gonna sigh.
Let's see if the luck holds, eh, everyone?
Yeah.
Wing at the sighs because she knows she's not gonna like this. But
get that bad Bernie feeling.
She's gonna slowly sheath her greatsword over her back and then unsheathe the broken flaming longsword from her hip and grip it and kind of like brace her feet against the stone walkway. And I rolled a 9.
Oh no. Okay. Oh boy. So you take a big swing at this coffin. And you watch the sword just hit it like a normal sword. Bong. And you look at the sword for a second, and then that crack ignites and shoots directly back at you.
Oh no. Wingatha's going to stop, drop, and roll on the coffin.
Oh my god. Just sort of chuck yourself right in there and take 5 damage.
It's the best of a bad situation if I ever heard one.
It's very plush. It smells fancy.
God damn it.
Doesn't smell like burning?
It does now. You smell a lot of burnt hair, and I think it gets your arms mostly.
Okay, well, once she's sure that it's actually igniting, she's going to get out, and she's like hitting herself all over trying to put the fire out.
This is hilarious. So you just lit yourself on fire and then chucked yourself into the coffin. Okay, well, great job. The coffin's on fire.
The bet was, one way or another, something's going to generate fire.
You know, earlier in this season, we had Flame Chuck the flute leg. And now we have Flame Chuck the fluff coffin. This is amazing.
Oh my God. Flame Chuck the dead warrior. Great. So, Lord help me. Okay, so it's Nyx's turn. And he has just recovered from what you can only assume, if it was anything like your nightmares, was something terrifying. And he struggles to his feet, and it takes him a while. And that's his move action for the round, because he was just flat on the ground. And he struggles to his feet, and he pulls out his crossbow. And I think that's going to be all he can do, because he was both very hurt and flat on the ground. So he spends his turn like getting up and like readying a crossbow bolt. And above him in the air, Oberon stops channeling, because all of you are free now, and it didn't work. And he blinks, and his eyes stop glowing, and his arms fall to his side. But he's still levitating. And I think as he does this, he had this mask, I think it was a simple black mask with a red rose carved into the side. And it is slipping off of his face, and it falls. And he is still handsome, but he looks unhinged and terrified, and he looks horrible. He has blood trickling out of his nose, and he is kind of shaking. And you guys can tell that he is in a really bad way. And he lifts his hand and forms a fist, and then opens his fist with his claws spread out as far as they can go. And Tonrir, he's looking at you. And something erupts at your feet. You have just blinked back into consciousness. You have just come back to this world. And already something very unnatural is happening. There is something of black smoke, something made of black smoke, coming out of the marble at your feet. And it's actually bursting through the floor and ruining it. It is a swarm of bats. They are conjured and they are made of smoke. And they all strike at you. So, let's see. Plus four. How's the 22?
That hits.
That'll do it. Okay. Whoopsie. For your enjoyment, I offer to you 7 damage.
All right.
Okay. So that swarm of bats like kind of bursts up through you and tears at you, and it's cold and it hurts. And they sort of swarm around you and strike you, and then they disappear. And something else starts happening. In the time that you guys have been in this castle, you have noticed that in almost every room, there are cracks in the walls. In almost every place, it looks like the castle is struggling. And you know from the way you came in that there was a wall of force protecting this castle from the sand above. And looking at Oberon, you do not think he can maintain that now. And sure enough, everything around you guys is beginning to rumble, and the castle is collapsing.
I fucking knew it. Oh, God damn it.
Next in the order is the thralls. Or I guess I should say young vampires, because they're not thralls anymore. And for the most part, they just look frightened. There are 5 that are awake, and 5 that are on the ground, either staked or knocked unconscious. And you guys remember that there's also one upstairs in a closet, our dresser. And these 5 thralls, they don't look like they know what to do. And they don't look like they know whose side they're on. They've spent almost a century in servitude. And I think that they spend this round just waking up. Next is Thalia, but she is actually unconscious on the floor. And now it is Gideon.
Iria kind of props Gideon up and is like, hey man, it's your turn.
Now you.
So remind me again, where's Oberon right now?
He is in the very center of the room, levitating about 40 feet up.
And he's aware of all of us, right? Like,
he is, yeah. He very much looks like he's on death's door, but he is aware of you.
How close is he to where I am?
He's 30 feet north of you and then 40 feet higher than you.
Hmm.
If something is close, we can totally flex it. Because I don't want you guys to have to spend this whole final interaction just like spending your terms moving, you know, 10 feet closer.
So he's 40 feet up, but if I were under him, he'd be less than 40 feet up? How does that?
I mean, let's say, you know, he's 40 feet in the air, but he's 5 feet and okay, now for starters, you're almost 7 feet tall. So, and then if you raise your arms, that's what, another 2-3 feet. So that's about 30 feet.
Oh my God.
And he's just in range, I would say.
Okay, well, that's not how this casting works, but I'm going to... So Gideon's going to push herself up off of Iria and stand on her own feet and kind of like, she looks like shit. She looks really torn up, but she has like a determined fury on her face and she's just marching forwards until she's within range of Oberon, looks straight up at him and just lets all of that rage and frustration come out in the ear-piercing scream.
Nice.
Again, I just love this because it's inaudible to all but a single target. So it just looks like I walked below him and opened my mouth.
But I think that especially with your claws out, you look terrifying when you do that.
Yeah, like she's literally letting all of the rage channel through her. So her claws are like flexing outwards and she's just roaring upwards, basically.
Man, it's so awesome. But the bad news I have for you is that he got a 24.
Well, so that saves him from the dazed, but he still gets half the damage.
Oh, okay, great. Oh, he actually is currently dazzled, so he actually can't see very well anyway.
Okay, well, he didn't have to use his eyes to hear this shit. okay, let's see. 1d6 per chest. It will be 5, halved, so.
We'll round it up to 3.
Okay.
All right, Tarnor, it is you, and you've just taken that hit.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, where's your owl?
Well, you said the owl was trying to wake me from the dream, so probably right nearby or next to me.
Okay, great.
All right, so I'm just going to try to keep this simple. Because I'm running low on spells, and now that the castle's starting to collapse... which is great. I'm going to save some things. So this is just going to be a straightforward draw the longbow, get a shot out on him.
Great.
Cool. Where'd it go? Okay, there we are. Okay, so that's 18 plus 2 to hit.
Yeah, that'll do.
Okay, and then this is going to be 1d8. All right, that's going to be 6 points of damage and the attack bonus is for the hit, not for the damage, correct?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, 6 points.
Hell yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I mean, Gideon goes up and screams, and you see him take that hit, and then you shoot him, and you see him take that hit, and you see it sink into his stomach, and he is looking worse and worse and worse by the second. And, Iria, it is you.
Wait.
Oh, sorry, you have more.
I have the owl.
I forgot about our favorite friend.
Okay. It's okay. It's okay. The gray cotton ball was the, or the, what was it? The pollen ball?
Puffball?
Puffball. Yeah. That was cute.
And we know his name now, which is great.
Yes. So he's going to do a gesture toward Lord Oberon and just call Ruthwein. And the owl's going to take off and do a clawing attack. And that is going to be a miss. It was a 5.
All right. I think Ruthwein, like, launches himself at Oberon, and Oberon is levitating, and he just took 2 hits, and he is not eager to take any more. And I think that he just kind of, in the air, darts backwards.
Hmm.
Which also actually brings him closer to the other side of the catwalk.
Perfect. You played right into my trap.
Iria, it is you. The castle is beginning to crumble, and we're going to deal with that soon. You know, there are 5 people who have just woken up and don't really know what's happening. And there are 5 more that are incapacitated. And there's Nyx, and there's also Thalia, who looks like she's in a really bad way.
Who are the incapacitated people?
Thralls, or ex-thralls, young vampires.
Okay, so like 5 of them are awake and 5 of them are not?
Down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The ones that are down are either ones that you guys hit so much that they just collapsed, or ones that Nyx put a stake in.
Okay. Well, I think I stopped my Inspire Courage. Well, I had to because I got into that nightmare. So I think Iria is going to start up her Inspire Courage performance again.
Cool.
And she's at 7 out of 11 performances today.
Great.
Everyone around her has +1 on saving throws against charm and fear, +1 competence on attacks and weapon damage rolls.
Okay, nice. Are you doing spoken word or your hang drum?
It's going back to spoken word, I think.
Okay. Talking more smack.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Also, Shiwa?
I was going to say she throws garlic as her free action. It's not going to do anything. But she throws it at Oberon. Yeah. And kind of like, while in her performance, there's like this line that is like just angry and attacking Oberon. And that's when she throws the garlic, kind of like to emphasize that part of her performance.
Please do give a strength check.
A strength check? Okay. Oh my. 7?
No.
No.
I think you throw the garlic. And it just kind of like, I don't know, what do you say? Like, what is this angry line in the middle of your poetry?
It's probably something like, you're crumbling just like your castle. And then she throws the...
I like that.
Garlic. And the garlic crumbles in the air because she can't throw very well.
So you dish out that tasty burn. And I think all the young vampires look to you with a sense of respect.
Until I
and then
the
you
garlic.
Throw the garlic and it goes like 2 feet and hits the ground. And then they look at you in confusion. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. All right, Wingatha, it is your turn. And you are close to the ceiling. So I need a dex saving throw from you.
Okay. Wait, why am I close to the ceiling?
Because you're up on the catwalk, so you're 15 feet from the ceiling.
Oh, okay.
And the ceiling is crumbling.
Yeah. Gotcha. An 8.
+1, right?
+1. Minus, yeah.
Minus so many. Like, minus, like, yeah, 2. That's not gonna do it.
Ouch.
Okay, so take 3 damage as some rubble falls and just hits you hard.
Damn.
So you're up on this catwalk and the ceiling is starting to come down. And the coffin is on fire. It's like very, very on fire.
Okay. Where did it hit her?
Your noggin.
Ow. Okay. Wingeth is going to stumble because she had just gotten to her feet after lighting the coffin on fire. And as she's like trying to stand up, this thing just like thump, falls down on her. And
you've had a rough 12 seconds.
And so she's going to stumble to her feet and she's going to go forward and grab the railing of the walkway that's closest to the ballroom and pull herself up so that she's standing over it. And she's like kind of dramatically backlit from behind with the fire.
Oh, yes.
And she's going to struggle to her feet. And she looks down at the scene below her. And she sees the group of young vampires who are kind of like looking around, not sure what to do. And she's going to raise her voice and talk to them.
Nice.
And so she's going to shout, "Hey, hey, you. Yeah, you, people of this castle."
Fuck yes. Fuck yes.
Do they notice?
Yeah, they look at you. They look at you.
Okay. She's going to spread her hands and say, "Look around you. This place is coming down. I know you're confused and probably scared, but you do have a choice."
Awesome.
And then she points at Oberon and she says, "That asshole did this to you. He put you in this position. He kept you here against your will. Maybe he made you do things you never would have done in your past lives. But I think that's not who you really are. And I think if you want to save yourselves, you should help us finish him."
Fuck yes!
You about to get screwed.
So the special thing that I had planned for Wingatha this arc, because everybody got some kind of something. And the special thing that I had for Wingatha, I nicknamed Experienced Officer.
Mm.
What I wanted her to be able to do was to help the other heroes escape their own fear encounters. Because what she is good at is motivating people. But I think that applies here too. I think that is exactly what you are doing. You are looking at a bunch of people who are frightened and have no idea what to do. And you're giving them direction. And so I want you to roll a charisma check. And I want you to roll twice and take the better number.
Okay. I have a +3 on charisma.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the better number was a 16. Which is really good because the bad number was a 2. And I rolled that first.
You get up on the sledge and you almost eat it. And then at the last second, you don't. Okay, that's fucking awesome. I think you say that. And there are five young vampires that are still standing. And before, they looked like a horde to you guys. There was just too many faces, and they all looked terrible. But now they look far more human than they did. And I think now you actually see them as individuals. There are 3 women and 2 men. And one of the men and 2 of the women are older, much older. As if they were, you know, on the older edge of middle age before all this happened. And one of the women and one of the men is young. And you're looking at these people who had lives before all this. And I think, Wingatha, you have a very intimate understanding of what it feels like to be under Oberon's control. And I think coming from that place, you give them this speech and they are motivated. And their teeth come out again. And they hold out their hands with claws. And they are not looking at you. They're looking at Oberon.
Hell yeah.
So it is Nyx's turn. And I think he looks at the thralls. And then he looks at you, Wingatha. And he just has this, like, this big fucking toothy grin. Like, hell yeah. And he is going to just try to shoot a crossbow bolt into Oberon. And he misses, unfortunately. So I think he tries to shoot a crossbow bolt at Oberon, and Oberon swats it out of the air. But he is looking worse and worse by the second. He is dazzled from Tanrir's spell before, and he looks like a shell of his former self. So I think Oberon has watched this happen. He has listened to this speech you just gave these thralls, and I think he looks to them now and he looks wild. He has this like long, slick black hair, and it is a mess. And there is blood leaking from his nostrils and from the side of his mouth. And he is all teeth. And he looks at these young vampires that he killed. And he tries to plead his case to them. And he says, "You. I offered you power. I offered you strength you never would have had. Look at you. You are magnificent. You are better than mortal. Stand with me now and finish these hunters, and we can have the life we deserve." And I'm going to roll charisma. Oh, bad roll, bud. Oh, boy. Yeah, that falls on deaf ears. Oh, boy. I only would have given him some help if he had done better than you, and he did far worse. So they do not look moved. And the scene gets a little bit spooky, guys, because these five people, and I think that they're a mix. There are some elves. One of them is a dwarf. There's some humans. You know, I think that there's a mix. They all turn their eyes on him, and they look at each other, and then they start climbing the walls.
Oof.
And they climb the walls easily. They climb the walls like gravity is nothing to them. And they throw themselves at him.
What kind of slippers do they have on?
Yeah, so they just start climbing the walls. And they throw themselves off the walls at him. Just one at a time, all five of them launch themselves at him. And let's see. Okay, not bad. So I think he's fighting them off. And I can't help but be reminded of in The Lion King when the hyenas are just like ripping Scar apart.
Yeah.
It has that energy for sure. They are just throwing themselves at him and they're catching his clothes and they're dragging him down. And I think one is hanging off of his leg and clawing him. And like, I mean, they are just giving him everything they've got. And he's still standing or floating. He's still levitating. But with every hit he takes, he looks worse and worse. And the next person to go is Thalia. And I think she has been struggling to recover. But now she wakes up. And she looks terrible. She looks worse than him. She has taken some hits. But she lifts her head off the floor and pushes herself into like a half laying position. And she looks at you, Iria, and you're playing music. Or you're doing spoken word, right?
Yeah.
Okay. She looks at you and she smiles. And she says, "Oh, pretty, pretty little kitty, let me help." And she starts to hum.
Ooh.
Hmm.
And she hums under your spoken word. And she makes your inspire courage stronger.
What?
Nice.
What?
That's so cool.
So I want everybody to take a +2 now. And Gideon, it is you.
Okay. If I do this correctly, it will be quite good.
Do it correctly.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Please.
So she's going to take a few steps back. Well, several steps back. Like she's going to back up like maybe 15 feet or so.
Okay.
And her claws are still out. And she's going to look at Oberon.
I'm so excited. I can't stand it.
She's going to look at Oberon, and she's going to lift her right hand up with her claws extended up to her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of something badass to say.
Cool.
All right. Okay. Okay. All right. So.
Okay. So he's floating in the air, and he's
floating in the air and being kind of dragged down. And Gideon starts talking as she's taking steps back. Her claws are out, and she's kind of, to others, it might look like she's kind of like swirling them around.
Mm-hmm.
As she's doing that with the two of her hands swirling around, there's a small spark that forms in between her claws. And she says, "You made me feel weak." And she continues swirling and the spark is growing bigger. And she says, "You thought you could enslave me." And it keeps growing bigger. And she continues, "You thought you could kill me."
I think as you do this, like, you have blood dripping from your nose and a little bit from your throat. And like, you look absolutely wrecked.
Yeah. She looks ragged as all hell.
But it makes it cooler. Like, that makes it, yeah.
And she's continuing to take those steps backwards, and she brings her claw, her right hand, and her claws extended. She brings that up to her mouth, and she says, "But I am a Grey Frost, and bigger monsters than you have tried. You are out of your league, Oberon." And then she casts Snapdragon Fireworks. The spell creates fireworks in the shape of small dragons, and it designates a target within a 5-foot square that's within 400 feet and launches that pyrotechnic in that direction. The pyrotechnic will take a zigzag path from me to that square, will miss other creatures and objects in its path, and then will detonate with a bang and a colorful burst of fire and light.
Fuck yes.
So creatures in the square take... This might affect the thralls too, unfortunately.
So I think that they... I mean, they were kind of throwing themselves at him and he was shaking them off.
Okay.
I think that the five of them, I mean, they dragged him down and they launched at him, but he has managed to shake them off. And he has just sort of done that. He has just been fighting them off. And he was, I think... pretty distracted, and he looks a mess. Like, he has claw marks all over him, and he's bleeding your blood. And I think as you start to speak, he looks at you as his castle is crumbling around him, and he sees this spell coming at him.
I'm just picturing, like, the camera's point of view is the spell, and it's like zigzagging and it's like dodging thralls midair and like zeroing in on the
thralls. Yes.
But yeah, he will be, he gets a reflex saving throw to negate a dazzle effect, but otherwise he takes 1d4 of fire damage, so if he has additional weakness to fire.
Yeah, his saving throw was bad, and also I think he does have a weakness to fire, let's see. I'm gonna say he does, that just makes sense.
Okay, I guess I'll just roll the d4. Oh, it's a 4!
Okay.
Hell yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
Roll it again.
Okay. That's another 4.
Okay.
Holy shit.
All right. And I think as you're doing this, you hear Iria's words and you hear Thalia's humming. And... God. These dragons that are on fire... They just hit him one after the other, and he screams. And as they hit him, he is burning up. And it is shocking how fast he goes up in flames. It's like taking a match to tissue paper. And he is there 1 second, looking at you in horror. And then the next second, there is flames. And dragons. And then this monster is just ash.
Oh, get fucked! Oh!
Uh.